What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Kind of Funny Games cast. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by one of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
Hi, Tim.
The new face of video games, Blessing, at AOEA Jr.
Hi, Tim.
And the former informer, Imran Khan.
Tim, hi.
I am very different. Excited about this episode, everybody. It is Kind of Funny's Game of the Year 2020 edition of the Kind of Funny Games cast. We have had 5 Game of the Years previously, which is insane to think about, Greg.
Checks out. Yeah, the checks
and
out.
And they are starting in 2015.
Uncharted 4.
2016.
Wait, hold on.
Oh, wait, no. 2016 would have been Uncharted 4.
Solid 5.
Yeah, we did.
That's Uncharted 4. 2017.
Breath of the Wild.
Probably. That checks out. That tracks.
It was either that or Horizon. I forget which one y'all chose.
It was Breath of the Wild.
It must have been.
Breath of the Wild. 2018.
Yeah. God of 2018.
War. Yeah, God of War.
Oh, it would have had to be God of War. 2019.
Jedi Fallen Order.
Yep. Yeah.
And here we are in 2020. What will happen? We'll have to find out.
I can't fucking wait because Imran Khan, January 11th, 6:08 p.m. Yo, I'm going to start some shit on Gamescast tomorrow. If he put Last of Us Part 2 at number 10 just to fuck the points, I'm going to kill this kid.
So here's the thing, everybody. We're doing it very different than we've ever done before. And I think that it's going to be the best method that we've ever done before because this is the Kind of Funny Gamescast. Each and every week we get together to talk about video games and all the things that we love about them. You can watch the show live as it's being recorded. And you also get the show ad-free with the exclusive post show by going to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like our Patreon producers, James Hastings, Sancho West Gaming, and Julian, the gluten-free gamer, have done. We appreciate them all very much. If you don't want to do any of that, that's fine. YouTube.com/kindoffunnygames is where you want to be. You can also listen to it as a podcast. Just search for Kinda Funny Games cast. If you like Rooster Teeth, guess what? On roosterteeth.com, we're there in video form too. We like to be everywhere, including new YouTube channels. youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays is our brand new YouTube channel. Thank you all for subscribing so far. We already have like 4,000 subscribers. I'm like, that's pretty cool. Where all of our Twitch stream archives will go, so people that aren't able to watch live will be able to watch later. Thank you all for the support everywhere. We appreciate you. Enough of all of this. It is time to get into it. Here is how we're going to do it this year, gentlemen. Barrett has been given the list of each one of our top 10s. He has organized it by points. It's all weighted where, you know, you get the 10 points. If it's your number one, yep. You get the 1 point. If it's your number 10,
yep.
Whatever game has the most points will be crowned the Kind of Funny Game of the Year. 2020.
And these are all secret ballots. Nobody knows. Yeah. Only Barrett. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, only I know. And like I was telling Blessing and Imran earlier today, like, because y'all's each separate top 10s were so different, like, this made like a very, like, I thought this top 10 list was going to be a shit show, but I think at the end of the day, it's going to be a pretty solid one. But
that means first one of five Royals with Game of the Year. Let's go, baby.
even with my crazy biases, again, like, for Persona, like, I think it's a overall pretty solid top 10 list.
I'm interested to see what the back five look like. You know, I mean, I'm interested overall to see what wins and everything else, but I feel like the back five were where I was just moving things around kind of, not indiscriminately, but like, on this day I could see this above. No, this one, you know, moving everything around.
And it,
well, so what we got going here is what we're going to do is we're going to start with the honorable mentions. Honorable mentions this year will be the games that did not make the top 10 that any of us put on our list. And we'll just like kind of talk about those real quick. Then we'll get into the top 10 and Barrett will reveal to us live for the first time the order from 10 all the way up to 1. But before we even get into that, I do want to go around and ask everybody what the strategy was in doing this. Because I just want to start this off by saying, God damn it.
Are you we got to acknowledge something that's going on right now.
No, we're not a Vlasic family, Imran, all right? Get out of here.
I don't know what you're talking about, Greg Miller.
Get out of here. That's disgusting. Let me enlarge this. Vlasic's gross to begin with, but I want to see what... Oh, he's drinking it too!
My strategy was to just go in and be true to my heart and be real. Don't think about the meta game here. Don't try to mess you guys all up. I was like, I'm making my top 10 list to be exactly what I think it should be.
I fucking love
you. And I'm not... Yeah. Blessing, what did you do?
I mean, I pretty much went with my heart for the most part. Like, I didn't really try to, like, game the system in any sort of way. I figured I'd just give an honest top 10, with the exception of, like, certain games where I was like, all right, this is very much a me pick that nobody else is going to pick, and so I'm going to leave this out. And so, like, Manifold Garden was one of my picks, and that's a game that technically came out in 2019, came out on PlayStation in 2020. And so, like, if I was doing just a blessing top 10 2020 game of the year, it'd be in there. But I figured for Gamescast, like, I wouldn't need to necessarily include that, because one, what are the chances of it popping up? And then two, do I consider it like a kind of funny game of the year, or like top 10 game of the year, versus just a blessing IDOA one? And so games like that I left off, but overall, like, I didn't really try to game the system too much outside of being true to what I think Kind of Funny's game of the year looks like.
Greg Miller.
Yeah, I took this as more, I mean, obviously there's no impartial or whatever. I took this more, this list, this top 10, very much like I would have taken my IGN top 10 voting, where it was like, what do I think was the game? What are the games that best summed up 2020? What are the games I thought that left a huge impact on me in 2020? Like, what I mean by that is that, you know, when I do my giant bomb list, that's always like me talking about my favorite games of the year. Like, spoiler alerts, like, Avengers is going to be on my giant bomb top 10 list. Avengers is not on my top 10. What could be possible game of the year votes for Gamescast?
Imran. The Dawn.
What shit are you starting? Where'd you put Genshin Impact?
It's on there.
Never would be.
I for the most part, I went with the most surprising games of the year. Games I was like, I'm not positive I'm going to like this, but then I end up actually liking it. But I was thinking for quite a while, like, how much politicking do I need to do for the top two? Because I figure Final Fantasy VII, I understand reasonably where that game might be on Tim and Blessing's list, but Greg was the wild card. So I didn't know, like, maybe I should have put that at one to, like, overcome other stuff. Yeah. But no, at the end of the day, I went with the games that I actually legitimately thought for, like, my 10 best game of the year. So my list is identical to the Giant Bomb list that's coming out that I put on time and Greg apparently put very late.
Yeah, but I'm still getting in there, in your face, Imran. I like your subreddit comment of, like, am I about to be the only kind of funny giant bombs? I want to say real quick, too, like, I'm in the same vein of, like, I thought about it, of, like, where you get that headspace of, like, where's Tim going to put this, or where's Blessing going to put this for the points and stuff like that. But in the long and short of it, I feel like for all the real runners that I think we all are going to have on our list that are going to be there, like, I think you can't go wrong this year for game of the year.
Absolutely.
Like, you know what I mean? Totally. Like, for sure, I mean, mine's Last of Us, but, like, If The Last of Us isn't the kind of funny game of the year, I totally get it. And there's like three or four other games that I just glance at my list and I'm like, yep.
I got Starbucks this morning and I was driving back home. And as I was driving home, I had the same thought Imran just did, where I was like, holy shit, Imran might make it so the Final Fantasy VII remake fucking wins Kind of Funny's game of the year. And I would not be mad at everybody, but let's get into it right now. The honorable mentions. These are the games that did not make the top 10. Because they were all on one of our lists, at least, but they did not get enough points to crack into the best of the best. The first one is Streets of Rage. Must have been an Imran pick.
That was definitely on mine. Like, that was one of the games that surprised the hell out of me this year, because I think I just, it was like right as quarantine began or something. I was like, I don't really have a lot to play, and they, Devolver or somebody sent me a code. And I was like, oh shit, this game's great. I think I ended up putting like 35 to 40 hours into a game that is like a 1 hour run each time. And like, it's one of those games where the platinum just straight up broke me, because it's like S rank on every level on hard, which is just complete bullshit. But yeah, that game is, the art is really good, the music's really good, the gameplay is really good. It's going to be one of the like most slept on titles of the year, no doubt.
The next one is Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2.
I
knew I was gonna be the only one putting it on, and this is one that I probably should have politics a little bit better, because I had a moment where I'm like, it's really close between this and Crash 4, and I was like, but which one would I put higher? And I put Tony Hawk higher, even though I knew that there was a chance Crash might be on someone else's list. Was it, Greg?
I did not put Crash on my list. No.
Okay. So it wouldn't have mattered either way. But yeah,
it was both on my personal list, Tim. Just to
thank you, Barrett. Yeah. Crash 4 is fantastic.
It's great.
But way better than it has any right to be. And Tony Hawk's Pro Skater remake is just proof to me that old can be new again, and that there are some classic games that actually are just as good now, and they do just need a new coat of paint to be able to rival, you know, current modern games coming out. The next one is Cyberpunk 2077.
Wow. Ooh. That's one that I had on my list. Yeah. That's like, that
Blessing,
was like,
you were the only one who put Cyberpunk.
Really?
On the list. Yep.
That surprised me. Well, actually, it doesn't surprise me. It's a messy game. But yeah, like overall, it definitely, I think, secured a spot on my list for the reasons that I've obviously talked about on reviews and different content. Like, I really enjoyed my time with that game, despite like a lot of issues that accompany it. I thought the world was really cool to get lost in. I really liked the characters. I really enjoyed the story. I really enjoyed the gameplay. Like, that's a game that I hope to see more of. I hope they iterate on it and continue to improve it and like make it better and better, because in a world where Cyberpunk 2077 ended up being the game that it should have been if it came out completed and wonderful, it could have easily secured a spot in my top three or two or one. But even without that, like, you know, being in my top 10, it still got that spot because I think regardless, it's still such a great game.
Dreams. Another Blessing
No, I don't think I had that in my top 10.
Yeah, Greg was the only person who voted for Dreams.
Yeah, I had it at 8. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've talked Dreams to, no, in the beginning we talked Dreams to death, and then for PS I Love You's underrated awards at the end of the year, we talked about how it's criminally underrated and underplayed, and that even, I think, includes me and includes Blessing for people who, obviously, our jobs are to play a million different things, so you get pushed off and you can't get back to things all the time. But Dreams is incredible, right? Like, the creativity in that, the amount of amazing shit people have been making and continue to make, and the community they've built around it, the tools there, I think, yeah, they're intimidating, but if you want to commit to it, you can do stuff. And I think, you know, it's the evolution of play, create, share. And I think there's a bunch of amazing things in there. And I can't wait to see how it continues to evolve and how PlayStation figures out how to support it, which is what it really needs to do.
Yeah, Dreams is one of the ones that I kind of struggled with on my list, because like I have my top 10 that I sent to Barrett, and I have like another five that were honorable mentions that I was trying to figure out for those last five spots and figure out like, okay, what belongs, what doesn't belong, and Dreams barely made it in for all the reasons that Greg said, right? Like it's the evolution of play, create, share, and I had such a great time in Dreams. Like I can't overstate how good I think the original campaign that Media Molecule made for Dreams is. And that's like a 2 to 3 hour experience that I had a fantastic time with, and reminded me of like what I like about indie games and what I like about art games. Like it had a lot of heart in it, and I appreciate that. And so shout out to Dreams.
Imran.
Mm-hmm.
Genshin Impact.
I figured I'd be the old, like, yeah, no, there's like a weird amount of affection I have for a game that I kind of hate. And like,
video games are cool.
Yeah, like I enjoy that game. It is actually like a legitimate good Breath of the Wild's clone. But at the end of the day, the fact that the business model, which is not like egregious in this game, but egregious in general, like holds it back so much, is what kept me from like putting it overly high on my list. And what also keeps me from understanding that, like, or allows me to understand that nobody else put it on a list. Cause like you can fall down a hole of, I'm just not getting good characters, and there's nothing I can do about that besides spend money. And then I ended up spending some money, but not enough to actually get good characters, which makes me think like, oh, I'm like a fucking rube. Like, this game is not like, I should not be liking this game as much as I do. So there's like, it's that dumb thing of, I understand this game is well made, but just there's an aspect of it that just drags the entire thing down, which is, when I started writing my list, I was like, Genshin Impact is here somewhere, but I'm not sure where. And I put it like the lower end of it. But it's still a game I enjoy, but not a game I would ever recommend.
It's a game that has, I think, a lot of things going for it. Because I almost fell down that exact hole you're talking about of playing it when it first came out that first night, and then like playing it a little bit the week after, and then like saying bye to it, and then coming back for it first impressions, and playing enough of it to go, oh, all right, this is kind of fun. And then like me kind of hitting that wall of like, okay, but I see where this is going, and being like, okay, I'm good. But like there's enough there as far as like how good the art style is, how good how beautiful the world is, and how vast it feels when you're traveling around it. The stuff that they take from Breath of the Wild and then reimagine in their own way that feels original, that I really appreciate. Like a lot of stuff is really well done and cool in ways that, yeah, if it got rid of some of the free-to-play aspects, or not even got rid of, but like toned back some of the free-to-play aspects, I could have seen myself like really getting into it.
The next one up is Doom Eternal.
Was I the only one that put this one?
Yep.
Man, I love Doom Eternal. I feel like Doom Eternal doesn't get enough love, obviously, because like it's very much an iterative game after Doom 2016 or Doom 28. Like, fuck, was it 2016?
16, yeah.
Why does it feel like that was forever ago? Doom Eternal, you know, I very much enjoyed that game for what it was in terms of like how much attitude it had as a Doom game, how much energy it had, you know, from the soundtrack, from the actual gameplay and all that stuff, how much it upped the ante in terms of every single element of Doom 2016. Had a blast with it. I get why it's an honorable mention, but yeah, I had it in my top 10. Shout out to
it. I liked that game. I didn't love it. And I think at the end of the day, like, that's what kind of kicked it off my top 10 was, I think I just wanted more Doom 2016. And Doom Eternal is, like, by definition, it's a better version of Doom 2016, but it's not more of that. It is, like, a more complex, more of a thinking man's Doom. It just wasn't exactly what I wanted. So, it, like, over the year, it kind of fell out of my headspace. I never really went back to it. But it's, like, a weird arc for that game where, like, it came out, critics loved it, then people started saying, like, no, this isn't what we want. Then towards the end of the year, it seemed like everybody loved it again. But it doesn't appear on anybody's game to go with.
So this next one, I gotta be real. Huge shocker to me being on this list. Ori and the Will of the Wisps.
Hmm.
I would have thought that would have at least gotten in at that like 8 or 9 spot.
Yeah, Tim, I think you were the only one who voted for it.
Where did you rank it, Tim?
It was low. It was like it was like 7 or 8. Or maybe even 9.
Yeah. But, and that's just a testament to the quality of games this year, because Ori is utterly fantastic. And, you know, if you go back and watch our review of it, like, our only criticism was it was buggy as shit and had a lot of like loading issues. If those are fixed, which they are now, it's like that game is utterly fantastic. And even with those things, we were still very, very high on it. It's just, you know, it wasn't going to be like a number one game of the year. But definitely, Give that game a shot. I've been thinking about actually replaying it on Switch, even though the fancier version's out. So there's something about laying in bed being able to play that I want to do. But I listen to the soundtrack to that game like every couple days, and it's a work of art that you get to play. And yeah. I think that as we go on in the generations of video games, like more and more of those type of art games have come to light. But I still think that there's something just special and wonderful about them. And you know, Ori, I think, is one of the best examples of merging atmosphere, gameplay, and wonder into one package.
I think context matters a lot in when we play a game and how we make these Game of the Year lists. And I think if Ori had come out in like November in the fixed way that it did, I think we would have all been like, oh no, this game is amazing. Like, we all do think the game is amazing. It's just a weird thing of like, it's hard to separate my feelings of the game from how I played it. And ultimately, like, I know I really love that game. And honestly, if I were making a very, very objective list of like the best games of the year, it would probably be on there. But I think it's a little too difficult for me to separate, like, oh yeah, it took like 2 seconds to pull up a map and that was annoying as shit.
Mm-hmm. Especially you have to bring up the map every 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Next one, Bugsnax.
Interesting. Yeah. I had Bugs Next on my list. You know, of course, I'm married to a woman who worked on PR for it, so I would have been. No, I'm kidding. Of course, Jen doesn't influence that decision, but I wanted to get that out there. I loved Bugs Next. You know, I mean, when I built my list, I was, and I don't want to spoil other picks coming up or things that were excluded or not excluded and where other games will fall, but it was for me a come to Jesus moment in a way of like, if I'm trying to take this in a more, you know, analytical or what, I have to set my own, rules, I guess, for why I'm putting things in there and why I can back a game. And Bugsnax is a game that, you know, I platinumed and played through and enjoyed the entire way through, and not only enjoyed the cutesy jokes of it and not only found it to be a relaxing experience, but also enjoyed platinuming it and also enjoyed chasing down every aspect of it and finding every secret to that game. And I think while there were a lot of great games this year, the ones that I wanted to be completely indebted to and do everything in were few and far between.
This next one must be an Imran pick. Moon.
Okay, yeah. No, I definitely knew this is going to be like the only person to put it there. But I watched Reb play this game, and it's basically like proto Undertale in a way that like Toby Fox has said he's never played this game, and I think he's a fucking liar, because there is just no way he's ever never played this game. It is so it's so clearly inspired everything about Undertale. Like, it's just a completely non-violent RPG. It's like a, if you were an NPC in Dragon Quest and you were just watching the hero just kill all these monsters, just going to like revive the monsters so they can go live a normal ass life that's not being killed by a hero. And like, that is this entire story. And like, it was such an interesting game because it's a 1997 PS1 game that was translated into English for the first time this year. And it's so weird and interesting, and it does things that no other game does, that are no other game besides Undertale, because it completely ripped it off. But like, I am so fascinated by just how this game existed for so long, and it just, this is the first time I've really ever heard of it. And like, it even has like references to Mario RPG in super strange ways that like, it, when I saw this game, like, usually when I make a top 10 list for the year, the number 10 spot is the thing that's like, this game wasn't fun, but I fucking like am in love with everything weird about it.
Really, and quick, like, Tamor Hussein, GameSpot's editor, managing editor. I forget his exact title.
Tamor.
Okay. Yeah, anyways, sure. Tamor in the chat says.
Yeah. Toby Fox, no one wanted to fucking give me his actual fucking title. Jesus.
Toby Fox has played it, according to
the title.
November
17th.
November 17th, 2017. Toby Fox tweeted, I want to mention another inspiration for Undertale is a game called Moon Remix RPG Adventure. So he has admitted it, Imran.
Oh,
you can
okay.
Take back. You can
I was
going to
say, because like literally in the Blessing show that's coming out on Thursday, I have a thing where I say Moon inspired Undertale. And I was like, fuck, do I need to go back and edit it?
it's like when Swery was like, I don't know what Twin Peaks is after Deadly Premonition had come out. Like, no, you're lying. It's fine to say you've seen it. It's inspiration is a broad tapestry. It's okay.
I love that Barrett straight up just pulled a Kevin. I've never heard him break that much.
Because well, I knew I was getting his job title wrong, and I figured Greg says it all the fucking time, so I figured he would have like
jumped. I don't think I've said it once. I think I say GameSpot's. I usually just give people credit to where they work. So IGN's Janet Garcia. Well, not even okay. You know, GameSpot's Tamor Hussein.
Yeah,
that's how you get around it.
I just loved it because you were just like, you know, Tamor, GameSpot's editor, managing editor. Tamor.
It was a great moment.
Like, I thought you were gonna go like Tamor has also played this, and I was like, all right, cool. No.
Yeah, according to Twitter.com, he's managing editor of GameSpot.
Managing editor. There we go. Well, yeah, he's in the chat. He said, yeah.
What's all right, cool.
We got Before I Forget. Greg Miller.
That was one of mine, obviously. Yeah, and I knew that obviously this was a game I was just putting on my list. I put it at the number 10 slot. It's a game that, you know, left a lasting impact on me, obviously. I've talked about it on this show. You know, Alzheimer's has a personal connection with me from back when I was covering a whole bunch of different stories for the Missourian and then the Columbia Daily Tribune back in my newspaper days. And so to find a video game that's from an indie that is one sitting indie game that goes through and gives, if you have no context for Alzheimer's, and then let alone, I think we all have no context for what it's like to have that, the way they confuse you as a player and the way you know, I go to the end of the hall, I know where I'm going, you open the door and you're back in the same closet you started at, is a great way of like, oh shit, this is what it would be like to have this, and trying to piece together this woman's story and what's going on. Of course, it's heartbreaking, but I think it's really powerful to show what this disease is, and so I thought it was something cool that needed to be on there.
And then the last honorable mention is one that I teased out a bit last week, but Resident Evil 3 Remake. I'm sure I was the only person to put it on this list. But yeah, like I was saying last week, don't want to go on too long about it, but I think that this is a perfect example of, we are so lucky that we are living in a world where video games are this plentiful and this high quality, that something like Resident Evil 3 Remake is just kind of like, it wasn't as good as the other one, so whatever. But it's like, damn, no, it was really good, and I'd love to get a lot more games like that, because it is just insanely impressive that we can get remakes that, like I was talking about earlier with Tony Hawk, that can like enhance the game so much for a modern experience. But still, a lot of issues with it. So, alas, I think it belongs in an honorable mention category.
Can I give a couple of shout outs to games that I know for sure are not in the top 10?
No, fuck you. No. This was basically, we had a ranked system, Blessing, all right? You had your chance.
These games were in my top 10, but I took them out because I was like, nobody else is going to vote for these. And I didn't even know we were going to do honorable mentions. And so I would have kept them if I knew. But shout out to The Pathless and Sackboy Big Adventure, which were like my 9 and 10. Love those games. Good games.
I'll have you know, I put Sackboy Big Adventure at number 1 on my list. So it has
God
10
damn
points.
It.
So it's
So now it is time to get into Kind of Funny's top 10 official game of the years. start with number 10.
Yeah, and just for the these first two spots, because of like how voting went, there's a couple. There's two ties.
Ooh,
two ties.
One is a three-way tie.
Ooh,
nice.
Three-way.
Oh, big fan.
Now, before we go any further, I have a question then, Tim.
Yes.
Do you want? Are we leaving them at ties? Or are we going to do runoffs for just that one spot? So you either vote for one of them, and one game stays, and the other is eliminated. Even though technically, you know, it should move up or down or whatever.
I don't want to eliminate it. I like keeping it there because it does belong there rightfully. But I'm down to have the conversation between us where we do decide which one is above the other one.
Okay.
They're still tied on the same spot, but we, you know, the listeners will know in our hearts where
sure,
the truth
got
is.
It.
All right. Number 10, Barrett, what you got for us?
A three-way tie.
Among Us, 13 Sentinels, Aegis Rim, and Fortnite. Is it Aegis?
Aegis. I don't know.
What something?
I don't
it's
know.
I call it 13 Sentinels. It's fine.
And Fortnite.
I'm really curious. Like, I kind of want to do a roll call vote on this to see where people like put that.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot. Sure. Yes. Okay. So, like, if you voted for Among Us, where'd you rank it?
Yeah.
Got it.
So all of these games were voted on once. I think they all came in at like one of your certain like
top five.
Yeah,
probably like number five for each of us.
Interesting.
Yeah, Fortnite was number five on my list.
And Among Us was number five on my list.
13 Sentinels for me, five.
There you go. That makes sense.
Okay, there we go.
Wow, yeah.
That's all.
Power of five. Three-way tie. Who wants to go first?
I mean, I can go first because I feel like mine is the obvious one. Among Us is a game that everyone played throughout the year. And for me, it was a game that really helped me connect with people during this time at home. Like, it was the most social game that came out this year in the way that I've had so many arguments and so many back and forths with people playing this game. You know, it's a cultural revolution. I don't know if that's like an overstatement to say. But, you know, whether I was playing this game with the homies online or I was playing this game with siblings, or cousins, like something about Among Us, I feel like is special from the idea that it is so culturally like unanimous as a thing that we're all engaging with this year, that like playing with these different groups of people, their own house rules that people are using and their own ways of playing, which I found to be fascinating. But yeah, aside from that, like, fun game, had a blast with it, one of my top five games, had a top five time with it. That's really all I have to say.
Top five time, baby.
Had a top five time. Top five.
Imran, you talked a lot last week about 13 Sentinels, but do you want to give any other shout out here?
No, I think it's I stand by what I was in. Five is like the perfect place for it because it's an amazing story without it like necessarily amazing gameplay. Again, perfectly fine, perfectly perfunctory. It works for the game, but like that story, man, it nests so many good plot twists in and of itself that like it's real easy to like dismiss it as sense. But then we start dismissing a lot of like great sci-fi in our times as just being anime nonsense too. And I think like, I'm not going to say like, oh man, 13 Sentinels is Asimov-esque. It's just a really, really good time travel story. And I hope people get a chance to like check it out and see it for what it is, not what they want it to be.
Mm. I definitely need to actually start it.
Yeah, that is a good first step.
And then Greg motherfucking Miller, Fortnite. Another game that did not come out in 2020, making a tie at the top 10 list.
Doesn't matter. Don't be old. Don't be old, IGN.
I'm just making a fun observation.
It's a great observation. I think, you know, as you, to sit here and talk about, for me personally, games that resonated and I thought did a great job of, you know, defining the year or whatever. I think Fortnite's on that list once again because it did. Like, I think Fortnite's Marvel season was incredible. I think the way they followed it up here with this Bounty Hunter season and to have, you know, Grogu and the Mandalorian and all these different people running around, the Black Panther tribute and salute and all that jazz. All the tie-ins and gimmicks aside, it's still Fortnite. It's still, you know, the fact that this game continues to reinvent itself, to pull people back in, to be this strange game for me that, you know, I can take a year off from, but then drop in and suddenly we're all back into it. You know what I mean? And I still, you know, Kevin's still slacking at night now, asking for people to go play with him. Barrett, you know, has been doing such a great job of going through and getting all his Beskar armor and stuff like that.
I got
the fact
Yodelini.
That we were so into that Marvel season. Yeah, exactly. I think Fortnite, you know, as much shit as people want to give it, is an incredible game and continues to be incredible and continues to make really great strides.
So now we have to choose which one ranks above the rest.
I would vote Among Us.
Yeah, I'd feel comfortable throwing my support to Among Us, honestly.
I was jokingly going to say Among Us is the obvious choice, but like...
You said it.
I mean, it is. Among Us, I mean, it was a phenomenon this year.
No, literally you started your thing saying Among Us is the obvious choice.
All right, well, obvious isn't like it's obvious why I would choose it.
Blessing's used to being wrong. Remember, he's usually wrong about things.
That's true. That's true. I do have a lot of wrong opinions about Indiana Jones.
Yeah, y'all hear that shit about Indiana Jones today. I expected one of you to call in. I was disappointed. You did not scold or fire Bless.
When I didn't even hear it. Well, I was on the road today. What happened?
I've not seen Indiana Jones, and I don't want to.
See signs, and you're watching it live Wednesday night, 9 p.m. with us. Don't forget.
I didn't know that you don't want to. That changes everything, because I also have not seen Indiana Jones.
Okay, so I'm not... Okay, thank you. Like, if people were going crazy, when I mentioned in the chat, people were going crazy, I've not seen Indiana Jones, and I'm of the perspective of, do I need to see Indiana Jones? Is it a must-see movie? And that might sound ridiculous, because Indiana Jones is Indiana Jones, but like, it's been how many years since that movie came out? Do we need to see every single movie that
Here's the thing is, you just got off the fucking hook the fact that Tim hasn't seen it. That's even more egregious than Blessing not having seen it. Blessing's young. Tim's old.
To get my thing there, it's like, I've seen bits and pieces, many bits and pieces of the first three. And I've never seen anything about Crystal Skull. But
knowledge is their treasure.
I'm excited to watch them one day. Maybe soon.
In review, gotta get Blessing in on that.
I would push for, I don't know if we're like trying to order them up, but I would push for Aegis Rim right under Among Us. Like Aegis Rim is a game that I started and I thought was absolutely beautiful in the art style. And I really dug the writing and I wish I played more of. That's a game where whenever I see people talk about it, who have played through the whole thing, they're always glowing. Aside from like a few things here or there, right? Like I'll always bring up how the titties are humongous in that game. And I feel like get in the way of this serious story that they're trying to tell.
You don't know how big the titties in Among Us are, to be fair. They could be huge.
That's a good point. I don't think there are titties in Among Us.
Point.
Maybe you can mod them in. Maybe there's like a little bunny.
Oh, you definitely can.
Just mod.
Imran, is your light on?
Yes. Okay. It is just like, usually the window or the sun is a good natural source of light. No sun today.
Gotcha.
I feel like his camera like suddenly got darker in like the last couple of minutes. I feel like Imran was brighter just a couple of minutes.
You know what? My key light turned off for some reason.
Oh. There we go.
Now we're back.
Yeah.
Back, baby. All right. Barrett, hit me with number 9. Another tie. Fall Guys and Yakuza Like a Dragon. I love Fall Guys. I put Fall Guys on my list pretty high. I think I had it at like number 4.
Yeah, so you were the only one to vote for Fall Guys, and then Imran was the only one to vote for Yakuza Like a Dragon, but you both had it so high that it tied for 9th.
Yeah, mine was 4 as well.
Oh, well, there you go. That makes a lot of sense, them being tied. But yeah, I think Fall Guys is a phenomenon. I think at one point this year, it would have been even higher on my list. Where it's just like was such a phenomenon and I was so in it the season one. Once it got into season two and stuff, I kind of fell off and I feel like it just got a little too samey. Like the season lasted too long, even with season one. I didn't get to 40, but I got to like 34 or some shit. But the style of gameplay I think is phenomenal. I love platformers. I love Mario Party. You put those two things together with a little battle royale action, you're gonna have a good time. And Fall Guys was absolute proof of it. It's one of the games that I remember, you know, first seeing a trailer for it at something Devolver Digital put out. I don't even remember when it was. It was a PAX or maybe E3 or something. But seeing the game, it was like, oh, this is gonna be awesome if they pull it off, and they pulled it off. Like that. To me, is my favorite bit of the whole thing is that Fall Guys is as fun as I thought it could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Fall Guys is a really great game.
If you're going back and forth.
Like it was a great game for like 3 days for me. And I was like, okay, after those 3 days, like, yeah, I got everything I needed out of this. It's not a bad game. It just didn't last for me.
Fall Guys is on my, it's in my, I have, you know, my list going way well beyond top 10 and it's in there. Right now it's number 12 on here, but it's like, could have gone up. It could have done different things. I enjoyed my time with it similar to Imran. And like once those first few nights, maybe even week of it, like I was like, all right, cool. Like I'm moving on to something else. I get it. It was a phenomenon. It is a great game. I'm with you, Tim, if you remember at E3, 2019, I guess, I gave it one of my Game of the Show awards, and it was that, see if they can pull it off. And I was surprised that they did, let alone the fact that it blew up the way it did. Like, it's a great game.
So then, Imran, give us the pitch. Yakuza.
I think I talked a lot about Yakuza last time, but like, if Fall Guys is like a good couple of days, Yakuza is like several seasons of a good show that ebbs and flows. Like, there are parts of that game that get real slow and real kind of actually kind of boring, and then they're like, suddenly it picks up in a way that's like, holy shit, I've got to play this for days. But my biggest pitch for Yakuza is that there's a business management minigame where every financial period you have to have a meeting with the investors and argue them down from their complaints of like, you don't treat workers well enough, or your profits could be a lot higher. By using charisma scores, one of your employees can be a chicken, and when the chicken doesn't interrupt them to tell them they're like, to argue them off, their sound is bagok, and then like they will get like knocked out and suddenly like have farts flowing up, and you can apologize by doing like a dogeza, which is like the head down bowing on the thing, and like suddenly everyone will just be like, oh yeah, no, he's making a good point, at least they apologize, and you'll win the investor meeting. Like, say what you will about any other game about 2020, nothing is quite like that.
When we were doing the Xbox preview program, played Like a Dragon. And I think as you look at the list here, and as we get a little bit deeper and probably talk about stuff I didn't vote for because I don't feel like I played enough of it, and it would be, you know, disingenuous to put it in there because of that. Yakuza is like, there's a whole bunch of games that came out this year, like Ori, that like I didn't play, but I know just aren't my type of game. And like, I respect how great it is and yada, yada, yada. Like, Yakuza is like the one that like I feel gnawing at me. And it's like that thing of like, when I beat Bloodborne, and then I'll probably be on to Hitman, but like, should I pick that up on Xbox? Do I just wait for March now and play it on PS5? Like, for my trophies, of course. Where does it net out? But like, every time Imran posts something, because there was one great one you put up, right? Where it's like, most games have you are the hero that saves the world, Yakuza Like a Dragon. And it was like the most mundane things that he was doing or whatever. And it's like, God, I enjoyed the demo we did so much. I'm ready to go in and get you play the entire thing.
Yeah.
Blessing. I'm going to leave the vote to you. Which one makes it above the other? Fall Guys or Yakuza?
Oh, Fall Guys and Yakuza. Oh, that's like an impossible pick, because they're like both probably, if I were to rank them in my list, they'd probably both be in that same place. I'm going to go Fall Guys. I think I had a more fun time with Fall Guys for what I played of it. Like, that's a game that I agree 100% with, you know, the things that y'all have to say about it. Like, you know, it was a game that, even though felt like it was hot for only a few weeks, when I go back to it, I still have a fun time. Like, going back to it after they've set up the private lobbies.
Yeah, and like getting playing to see it what for the new seasons were. The anniversary and stuff. Like, actually like got back into it and like played like a bunch of season 3 on my own and stuff.
Yeah, and I remember my first time playing the game during a preview, and like I think it was actually the beta back in July. I remember playing it for the first time and being like, "Yo, this game is so fun that it's making me tear up about how fun this is." You know, at times it's like that's like a fucking like dark time in the world, I should say. Like, you know, playing that game and having that much fun immediately, I was like, "Wow, this is something special." And like it continues to be something special, right? It's not as hot as it was when it first launched, but it still seems like it is hot regardless, and so. I'm going to go Fall Guys.
I mean, it feels like a Nintendo game not made by Nintendo. And yeah. I'm always going to love that. Now it is time for number 8.
Hey!
Persona 5 Royal. Wow.
I already know. Okay. I was probably the only one that had this on their list, and it was my number one.
Yep, and that's why I was able to make it, because it got so many points because it was your game of the year.
Let's go, baby. I mean, I don't know what more I can say about this game, because I feel like I've talked about this game today. It's such a good iteration on Persona 5 proper. Like, everything that they added to Persona 5 in Royal felt like it either addressed any issue that I had with the game, or made the game better in a number of ways. And the characters that they added, the story arcs that they added, only uplifted the game entirely. The extra smash that they added, the new ending, blew me away, and I loved it even way more than the original ending. Like, they really, really went all the way with Persona 5 Royal, and it was my favorite game I played this year.
Yeah, like the new content for me, like the base game, ends in this like huge, crazy, kind of typical anime bullshit. Like you start off as high schoolers and then at the end of the show, they fight God kind of shit, right? And like what Persona 5 Royal does is like you still get like pretty much everything from the base game, but then they add this kind of like extra content that brings the story back to being personal. And kind of the ending of the base game was like, you against this God who's going to take the free will of the people and like kind of make them suffer and like kind of do their bidding and shit like that. But then kind of Persona 5 Royal, like the new content and the new ending kind of flips it and is like, all right, like what if someone were to take away free will, but is doing that to try to make everybody live their best life and to make everybody happy? And like, what do how do the protagonists feel about that? What do they do to go against that? And if they go against that, and it just adds a lot more commentary that is way more personal, I think, to the main characters and ends in a way that like makes much more sense. Like I loved the ending of the base game and I was kind of scared for Royal of like, are they going to nail it? And like, I can't imagine the Persona story without the stuff added in Royal, story-wise and gameplay-wise.
Yeah, and I echo everything Barrett just said, right, in terms of the things that they've added thematically with the new stuff, the way in which you have new characters and you have, like, added villains and all this stuff, and I think the thing that makes the new stuff special is the fact that, like, in the base game, you have this, like, objective toward the end of the game, and, like, and it's like, cool, we know good and evil here. Like, we know how this is supposed to end. This is your typical JRPG or anime storyline where by the end of it, like, everybody's superpowered and all this stuff. And with the added content, I think they really pulled off the thing of, shoot, man, I don't know whose side I'm on with this argument, because I can understand where everybody's coming from here. Even me as the player character, like, I know what I must do, but part of me kind of doesn't want to do it, because, like, The places where they're taking this argument that they're presenting and the way in which they're kind of grinding it down and make you kind of sit with it a bit is very compelling and very interesting, and was one of the few times in a game where I'm like, fuck, man, I almost don't want to beat this, because I hear where everybody's coming from here. And even by the time you carry it forward and you carry it through and finish the game, like the way they follow up on that and follow up on and pull on those strings continually, even past that, I think is just done very well.
Again, Akechi is Kylo Ren done right. Akechi was like an okay kind of foil to the main character in the base game, and Akechi might actually just be the best character now in Royal because of the new story stuff.
Let's move on to number 7.
Hey.
Hell yeah. Astro's Playroom. Gotta say, lower than I expected it to be. I thought this one was going to be top 5, but
where'd
again,
you put it?
Crazy ass year. I don't know.
Oh. I put it at number six on my list.
It accumulated like 13 points in total, I think.
Was it on everyone's list?
No, it wasn't mine.
It was on mine.
I struggled with a little while trying to put it on my list, and ultimately I think it just kind of fell short. Because like I think if they make a actual real game out of this stuff, out of this base, then I think, oh, absolutely, Astro's sequel is going to be game of the year quality game. But like the thing, when I thought about it more, the thing that appealed most to me was the really expertly designed PlayStation references and the music and the personality. But the actual game was like, you know, this is fine. This is not, you know, and I think maybe that would have changed if I had become like Jeff Grubb and just given my soul away to speedruns. But just
chase the speedrun time over.
Yeah,
and
just
over
chase
and
that
over.
Dragon forever. But yeah. No, I think that was not me for me. So it was just a really nice game. But I totally understand why everyone loves it as much as they do.
Yeah, for me, I'm kind of in a different place than you, where I like how short of an experience it was, and I think that in opposition to something like Sackboy, which I did not enjoy nearly as much as Blessing does.
How dare you?
I feel like Astro has the style, it has the music, it has the references and all that. But it's fun to control. It has that, you know, that 3D platformer magic where it just feels good. And I liked the unique situations they put you in, and I felt like it didn't overstay its welcome, and it's one of the few games I've ever platinumed, and I think that platinuming it was fun. Like all the extra things 100%. You had to do kind of felt thought out and planned, and on top of that, the fact that this game is free for all intents and purposes, I think it adds up to a really killer package that I don't necessarily want more of. Like, I liked what it was. I mean, if they made something different, I'd be stoked about it. But I liked it being a smaller experience, that it wasn't just a never-ending platform-a-thon.
Sure. Yeah, I thought top to bottom, Astro's Playroom is just fantastic. Like, I enjoyed it the entire way through. We platinumed it as well. Didn't get into the time stuff like Jeffy Grub did. But yeah, I loved the references, sure, and I loved that. But I also did love the platforming, and I did love trying to figure out where the puzzle pieces were, and I did love trying to crack what they were going for. And I thought when it was, you know, get into the, you know, sticky cup bouncy thing, or get into being the monkey, or get into any of the other little weird things you got into, even if I didn't love it, it didn't overstay its welcome, and I actually ended up enjoying it by the time it was over. Like, I, you know, when I first started controlling the giant, like King Kong, it was like, I don't know. But then by the end of it, I liked it. And when I had to come back and replay it for platinums and, you know, chasing down puzzle pieces, I wasn't annoyed by it, which I thought I might be when I first started it.
Let's move on to number six. Spider-Man Miles Morales.
The disrespect.
That feels right to me. I think I put it higher on my list, but I think for a group list, I think that, you know, not top five makes some sense. I would say six or seven really makes sense, because, you know, it is a fantastic game full of obviously gameplay that we love and so many fun things to do. It cut all of the fat, I think, of Spider-Man 2018. 100%. It kept all of the things that we loved story and character wise, but I think he even doubled down and kind of did something incredibly fresh. You love to see it. The background right now, Spider-Man. It's hard to see, but trust me, it is. But yeah, I think that it's a game that I think had enough content to keep me happy, but I wish I had more. And I feel like there is no amount of that game that would satiate my desire to play it, because just swinging around is that damn fun. However, it is just kind of Spider-Man 2018 again.
Which is kind of like, it's kind of why it didn't end up on my list. Is like, I was thinking about it and I enjoyed that game enough to platinum it. Granted, it was also like, I don't know if this is the PS5's fault or the game's fault, but man, it was buggy as hell. Because like, as launch software, it just crashed my system like crazy. But like, I think ultimately I really enjoyed that game, but it didn't surprise me in any way. And that's kind of what I was mostly prioritizing, not intentionally, but like that's kind of what I was feeling this year, was like the big surprises. And Miles Morales was just like, here is more, like, this is better than City That Never Sleeps, probably better than the original Spider-Man, but mainly because it was more condensed and more like, it was like mainlining Spider-Man versus, you know, cooking it. But like, it was a really good game that I don't really have a good excuse for why it's not on my list. It just,
see, yeah, you're saying it's better than Spider-Man. It trimmed all the fat of Spider-Man, but like, and I totally get that. For me, it was number three. Like, I adored Miles Morales, and it's one of those that I'm going to platinum on PS4. Like, I liked it enough that I want to replay it two more times, right, to run through and do, because like, I thought Miles was great. I thought the story was great. I thought the supporting characters was great. I thought it was such a step. And I know we've done reviews, so I'm condensing the best I can. It was such a step up in terms of cinematography and pacing and everything else from Insomniac. Like, it has me so excited for more in the Insomniac Spider-Man universe. Not that that was like something I was, they announced Spider-Man 2 tomorrow without Miles, and I'm like, oh, fuck, I don't care. But it's like, anxious to get more content in there. And I thought they did such a great job with it.
What you just said right there actually kind of crystallized for me why it didn't appear on my list. Is while the compressing of the game really helped the gameplay, I think that bothered me in the story. I think there just wasn't enough time for anything to breathe. Like, the second you see some characters, like whenever you see someone in a mask, either that scene or the next scene, they will take off their mask. I didn't get a chance to actually wonder who this person is, even though I obviously know because I've seen Spider-Verse. But like, it was so weird that like there was no mystery to any of that part of that game. Even though it's not a mystery game, but I felt like I was being rushed through the story instead of giving it a chance to like live on its own. And I think that's maybe why it didn't hit as hard for me.
That was my exact thing. Like, this game, the game is on my list at like number 10. Because like, overall, it's a Spider-Man game and I love Spider-Man. And if you put out a Spider-Man game, I'm going to enjoy it, and it'll probably end up as one of my top 10 games of the year. But for Greg Miller of Kind of Funny, yes.
Yeah, but on the IGN review crew, you hated Miles Morales.
Yeah, that's what I heard. That's what I heard.
I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, you hated it so much that you put it as your number 10.
I think I just had like the dissenting opinion. I don't think I had a hating opinion on the game.
Seem like that's what the internet thinks.
Oh God, no. but I definitely echo what Imran is saying, because that was one of my complaints with the game, is that like the story felt to me comparable to just like an average Marvel movie, where I feel like there's that thing that Marvel movies have where you get into it and it's like, okay, cool, it's a villain. All right, this villain feels kind of underdeveloped, and it's like, how did we get here? And they're making some leaps that I don't necessarily know if we need to make. And then you like get into certain other characters, and it's like, okay, this side character is awesome. Wish they're a bit more fleshed out. And like, I had a lot of that with Miles Morales. But the thing that does elevate it for me is the style, and is the flavor, and is the music, the soundtrack, the different vibe that I feel like New York has through the lens of Miles Morales, as compared to through the lens of Peter Parker. Like, it does feel like you're getting two different distinct New Yorks, which I think is a very cool thing that they were able to pull off in a very awesome way. And so, yeah, overall, like, I think this is a perfect spot for Miles Morales on our list.
But before we get into our top five, I want to tell you about our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Honey. These days, it feels like online shopping is the only shopping we do, and that's where today's sponsor, Honey, comes in. It's the free browser extension that scours the internet for promo codes and automatically tests them when you're checking out. It's awesome. I've been using it for years. You literally just install it once. It's so easy, just a couple clicks, then it's there. Then anytime you're shopping online, whether it's a site like Best Buy or a site like Etsy, anything in between, when you go to check out, Honey will automatically just apply the best coupon codes to make sure that you're saving money. I have saved thousands of dollars using this over time. I absolutely love it. It's great. Kind of Funny uses it. Everyone at Kind of Funny uses it. It's honestly ridiculous if you're not using it. It's just a free way to save money, and you don't need to do anything. It's simple. If you have a computer, Honey should be on it. Go to joinhoney.com/kinda. So they know that we sent you. joinhoney.com/kinda to get it for free today. Absolutely free. joinhoney.com/kinda. Next up, shout out to Upstart. Upstart is the fast and easy way to get a personal loan to pay off your debt, all online. Whether it's paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses, over 500,000 people have used Upstart to get a simple fixed monthly payment. My friend did this, and it was really, really good for him to be able to just consolidate all of his debt into one place to focus on it. And now he's debt-free, all thanks to Upstart. You can get approved the same day and can receive funds as fast as one business day. If debt's taking over your life, it's time to get a fresh start with Upstart. You can find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today when you go to upstart.com/kindoffunny. That's upstart.com/kindoffunny. Don't forget to use our URL to let them know that we sent you. upstart.com/kindoffunny. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. One more time, upstart.com/kindoffunny. And finally, of course, shout out to Hims. You know, the thing about ED is it's something nobody wants to talk about, but it affects so many different people. Again, one of my really good friends has some issues with this stuff, and Hims has been there to help. ForHims.com is all about men's wellness. If you need help with ED, hair loss, or if you just have a cold, interested in mental health, COVID-19 home test, Hims is here for you. Through Hims, you can get prescription medication that treats ED, real science, real solutions. Hims makes it easy. They connect you with a licensed medical professional online who can prescribe FDA-approved prescription medication to treat ED. You get the same active ingredient as the expensive little pill, but without the expensive price tag, and that's fantastic. It would cost hundreds of dollars if you had to go through a doctor or pharmacy. Not so with Hims. Hims makes it simple and affordable without any embarrassing conversations. Why live with ED when the solution can be so simple? Try Hims today by starting out with a free online visit. Go to forhims.com/kindoffunny for your free visit. That's forhims.com/kindoffunny. forhims.com/kindoffunny. Prescription products are subject to medical provider approval and require an online consultation with a medical provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. You can see website for full details and safety information. Remember, that's forhims.com/kindoffunny. Number five.
Oh, fuck shit. You guys. Fuck you guys.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. Well, so it's Animal Crossing New Horizons for audio listeners. now it's Greg said something, and now I'm starting to scheme and think about this. And I think Greg has taken Final Fantasy VII out of the running of being possible to be that high. Because I'm trying to do the math on where Greg's list goes. So this is all getting
Imran's the one who wanted to start shit. Imran's the one who wanted to start shit. I assure you, I bet Final Fantasy Remake is still coming. It might even be next.
Oh, it's definitely coming. It's definitely on the list.
Are you talking game of the year or not?
Okay, my apologies.
Yeah. But anyway, enough of that. Animal Crossing, Greg Miller. Well, first off, who had it on their list?
I did.
Okay, Greg and Imran.
Get some taste, Blessing. Tim, you're supposed to be the Nintendo guy. I played 5 hours.
I fell asleep. Because music
you're
was
such
really
a
great.
Piece of shit. Oh, I fucking hate you.
I will say, like falling asleep to it, I wouldn't be surprised by if I ever played it. Because the music, I will shout out.
The music is so good.
It's so good, yeah. And it's so relaxing.
It's so relaxing.
The fact that you can fall asleep to it is, I think, why I love that game.
I never like, fell asleep to Doom Eternal.
I mean, sure, but Doom Eternal was like honorable mentions and not number 5. But like, Animal Crossing
I'm just
is
talking
like
music-wise.
It's the 2020 game. It is like it came out right around quarantine. It just basically like I think a lot of that game's virtues kind of got erased by the fact that everyone's just at home playing it. But it's this like little microcosm world where nothing is wrong, where we can all just kind of enjoy the fact that there's nothing to worry about besides getting enough fish or getting enough bells to pay off a loan that isn't due forever. Or I'm never going to pay off my last loan. Screw it. Tom Nook can wait forever. I do not have to give him that money. It's like when I couldn't see people, it was a place to like hang out. And it still is. Like I hung out with Reb to watch the Aurora Borealis in like a small little part of our island. I played musical chairs with people in that game. Like it has a quality that no other game is ever going to have. And like even straight ripoffs aren't going to have that level of like heart, because one of the things that is amazing about this game, or not necessarily amazing but notable about it, is that this comes from a like large corporation and yet it has this much heart. And at the end of the day, I think for me it was number 3, so I don't think it's game of the year, but I do think it is the game of 2020, the one that defines it and the one that mitigates it the most.
Yeah, for me, Animal Crossing was number 2 on my list that I submitted for Barrett. And I just think the game's incredible. And I think for everything Imran just said, and I think, you know, the biggest knock people give to it is like, oh, it's more Animal Crossing, which is true, but of course. But as somebody who's played so many Animal Crossings, like this one does so much right and does it so well. Not the travel system of going to your friend's house and all that shit and how bad the online is and yada, yada. And there's plenty to load times. There's plenty to talk shit about and pick apart. But like, it is a game that is pretty much all I played on Switch this year. Like even turning on the Switch to play something else, I would dip into games and try them out and be like, cool, but I'm on my Switch. I really should be. And I jump back to Animal Crossing and fuck around with it. And now as they continue with the seasonal events, jumping back into it and going in there and trying to, you know, have a reason again to turn it on every day to get in Halloween, get my pieces of candy to give Jack, you know, in the build up to Christmas, get stuff there, even right now, still in winter, to go through and do it. It's been awesome to see the legs on it, but yeah, it's been such a piece of comfort food. It has been such a zen garden in a video game way of, you know, some of my favorite memories of this quarantine, right, are when it dropped and it was Tiger King and it was you were binging something on Netflix while I just fuck around with different paths and I fuck around with what I want to plan. And what a big deal it was when the sloth from Earth Day showed up, right, for the first time, and we were able to get new shrubs and all this other stuff. Like Animal Crossing is so heartwarming and such soul food. It is something I needed so bad in 2020.
Number 4.
Knew
Ghost
it.
Of Tsushima. Greg Miller, you want to take this one?
Sure. Hey, everybody. It's me, Greg Miller. This is Ghost of Tsushima. I put this at my number 4 slot, so this is right on the money for me. I mean, Ghost, a fantastic game. As you know, I think in the way we talk about, or the way I talk about all the time, Horizon and Guerrilla, and how having followed Guerrilla forever, it was awesome to see, you know, Killzone, something people were like, that's not for me, and didn't pay attention to see Guerrilla get a shot to be Horizon and really turn people's heads. Same thing here, where I think I connected so hard with Infamous, obviously, as everybody knows, but for Infamous Second Son to have been pretty in the launch window of PlayStation 4 and be, oh, that's an okay game, right? That was like, they didn't get all of that. You know what I mean? That was a double when they wanted a home run. For Sucker Punch to go back to the drawing board, come out with Ghost of Tsushima, do this, you know, when everybody wants Assassin's Creed Samurai game, to deliver that. And have it drop right after Last of Us, which I think in so many different ways worked for and against it. Where I'll never forget turning it on. It was, you know, we got it like the, I think while we were finishing Last of Us, we got Ghost. And to put Ghost in and have Jen walk in, I'm like, oh my God, their faces. And I'm like, yeah, but remember, this is an open world. This isn't like supposed trying to be Last of Us. And to get deeper and deeper into that game and find Ghost's style and its art and its colors and its music and its characters and to layer all that on. And, you know, to really, for me personally, really dig Jin and really dig the story he was on and what we were doing and the environments all having their own things, let alone leveling up and going from being a fumbling samurai to being the Ghost and being this assassin and being able to go in and, you know, take on 30 guys at once, you know, like Batman Begins, and not break a sweat and feel awesome and have these amazing duels and the way it would cut and frame and cinematography. Like, I think Ghost is a work of art.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It was in my top three. Like, I totally adored Ghost, and I adored it even more once I even got to Ghost of Tsushima Legends. And I think that was the thing that hit for me, where I realized how truly fun the gameplay is, even removed from it being an open world. Because, like, playing the base game, right, like, I really dug Ghost of Tsushima, and going through the open world I found was fun, but I hit that point where I was like, okay, this is definitely an open world as open world game, where I'm doing the checklist stuff, and stuff is repeating. Okay, cool. Now I'm, like, kind of pittering out on it. When Legends hit, and I got to interact with that game in a way that was, okay, yeah, you're going mission by mission, you're playing with friends, you're doing raids and all this stuff, and you're doing survivals and all this stuff, I found that game had new life that I didn't realize that it could have. And, like, you know, from gameplay, I had a blast with it. From style, Greg mentioned, like, that game just has such a strong style to it that I really appreciate. And, like, those two styles that it has between base game and Legends are both distinct and still very cool in a way that I very much appreciate. Like, that game went above and beyond what I even thought it was going to do when we were first leading up to it, in a way that, like, kind of came unexpected, even when I got my hands on the game, because I had that same arc of beating The Last of Us Part Two, you know, seeing that game is like such a masterpiece in tech and facial animation and all that stuff, and then moving on to Ghost of Tsushima and being like, all right, this looks kind of ugly. But then as I kind of settled into that game, and as I kind of like understood what Ghost of Tsushima was, because I think at first I was kind of thinking of it to be all right, this is going to be like a Soulsy Sekiro combat game with Breath of the Wild-ish open world, all right, let's see how this goes. And playing it and kind of realizing that, no, it's basically Samurai Assassin's Creed with a very awesome style. The more I got to dig into it, the more I appreciated that, and the more I had fun with that. And so, shout out to Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah, it was, for me, it was a number six. And, like, when that game came out, I was like, okay, this is it. This is Assassin's Creed in a more open world things without big cities or anything like that. And, like, that's cool, but it's been done. And then the more over the year I thought about it and, like, talked to people and, like, played a bit more myself and played a bit of Legends, I was like, okay, wait, actually, finding the things that work about an old idea and, like, making that come down to, like, the exact points you want, is that is also artistry. That it's like there is a lot of skill in making those things palatable and fresh for a modern audience. And I think that's what Ghost of Tsushima does incredibly well, is that it takes all these ideas that are a little, you know, old at this point, but it's like it's inspired by them rather than copying them full whole, and that is, it makes for a better game in the end.
So now it's time for the final three.
Before we start, do you want to make predictions on what it's going to be?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Because I think it's going to be, it's really questionable, because it's going to be interesting. I don't know, right?
I'm so excited for you guys to find out.
Oh, that makes me think that I don't know what it is. Okay. Shit, fuck. I think it's going to be Hades, Final Fantasy, Last of Us, but I could easily see Hades, Last of Us, Final Fantasy.
I think Final Fantasy is going to be number three, and then it's going to be, I don't know what's going to win between Hades and Last of Us. I think one of those two is going to be number one.
I think Hades is number three.
I think Hades 3, FF7 2, Last of Us 1.
Me too.
There we go.
That's what I think. Nope. Hades, no. Baby. There you go. What a goddamn video game. Loving it. Still loving it. Every single time I play it, it's just such a damn joy. It's fun. I love when video games are fun. They're often not fun enough. Hades is one of the most fun video games I've played in a very long time. And I was saying this last week, but I love how any variation of a loadout, I'm enjoying, and I'm never bummed about something. I'm always like, okay, cool. This is what I want. You know, this is fun for me right now. And it has just the right amount of customization without it being overbearing. And the characters are fun. The look of it obviously is awesome. And it moves so quickly that it's like you don't even have time to worry about the things that you might not absolutely love about it.
Hades was my number one. And I think we're probably going to have the conversation more as this podcast goes on, but about the idea of moving video games forward. And I think Hades probably does that for me better than any other game this year. Because roguelikes and roguelites are a very common genre in the indie space. Like, there's honestly way too common, way too many of them. But
no,
like,
not enough.
Hades is like this great thing that it baffles me nobody ever thought of is, how do we contextualize this stuff better? How do we make it a narrative around the fact that you're going to die over and over again? And like, how do you incentivize like that weird part between runs where you're preparing again to actually go like talk to people, to make new items, to like fix curtains in a room or something? Like, these are things that like Hades, it may sound like a small bit, and it sounds so small, it sounds like they've done nothing at all except for like added some window dressing, literally window dressing in some of the stuff. But it's what incentivizes you to actually make that next run, because you do get a breather, but that breather feels good and the actual action feels good. So it's not just like one part is like less than the other. It's these two parts working in like perfect harmony. And I can see why, like, as opposed to Bastion, Transistor, and the rest, why they actually put this one in early access, because there's just so much fine tuning to get done to like, how do we make these things work in harmony? And the fact that they managed it, the fact that they did it, speaks, one, incredibly of their talent, but two, of the fact that they thought of something in a way that should have been thought of years ago, and it just blows me away that it wasn't.
Dude, totally. I put it as my number three, because I do think that at the end of the day, for as incredible as it is lacking something for me for being game of the year. And maybe that is just scale and scope, but it's a fantastic video game. But I'm happy where it's at right now.
Yeah, but I totally adore the game.
Anything else to say?
Like, I just want to shout out how good the game looks and sounds. Like, aesthetically, I think the game is fantastic. The art is obviously Supergiant, and so like we understand what they can do. We've seen their games before. We know how Transistor looks and sounds like. But Hades, I think, goes even further in terms of nailing that and making me and so many other people, right, like fall in love with these characters and really get acquainted with, okay, yeah, no, Hermes is this person over here, and this is why I like Megaris, and this is why I like Hades, and this is why you know, I like each and every character in the game, right? There are so many different great personalities in the way that they're able to shine, both through the writing, the voice acting, and the art itself. I think it's just so well done, and yeah, it does the thing. It is a very excellent roguelite in the way that it's designed. And I think that is definitely a thing that should be shouted out, because I'm a person that really enjoys the genre. There's such a pushback in general when it comes to roguelites, which I don't necessarily understand fully, because I feel like roguelites are just an evolution of arcade games where you're playing something over and over again. But in roguelites, a lot of the time you're having progression stay with you, and so that makes it even better. Like, that's the thing that I love about them. And Hades did the thing that Imran is saying, right, where it went the extra mile and really tied that in narratively and made that loop extremely interesting. And so shout out to Hades.
Definitely. And now it's time, baby. What is number two? Oh, Buffalo Blast.
God damn it.
Good job, Barry. That's a good one. I like where you had that. Sorry, guys. My bad.
Wow. Holy shit.
Wow.
Wow. Oh. Audio listeners, The Last of Us Part 2 is number two.
Guess
you're
what?
Crucify us.
I started some shit.
Did you not even rank it?
No, it's number nine.
I got you. Yeah. Fair enough.
Oh, my God. It was number one for me.
It was number four for me.
There you go.
Whoa. The Last of Us Part Two coming in at number two.
Yeah. So to break it down. So let's see, Blessing It had it at number 4, Tim and Greg had it at number 1, and then Imran had it at number 9. In total, the points it got was 29 points.
Wow.
I'm gonna be curious, Barrett, by the way, what number 1 gets when we get there.
Yeah. I want point totals for number 1 for sure.
What do you guys think number 1's gonna be?
I think I know.
I'm gonna guess Half Life Alyx.
Yeah, I know. I think DBZ Kakarot has a strong chance.
Last of Us Part 2, what a phenomenal game. You know what I mean? We've talked to death. You know it's how many things. I think it's a masterpiece. From voice acting to music to gameplay to environments to graphics to you name it, I think the game's incredible. And it's such a definition of a Greg Miller game, of what I want out of my video game experiences. Like, I can't get enough of it.
Yeah, I think that somehow Last of Us 2 is underrated. Because I think that it is so fucking phenomenal. And there are so many people that I know that, like, I often bring my friends up when I'm talking about video games and their experiences, because so many of them are much more casual. And that doesn't necessarily mean they don't play games at all. Like, a lot of these people, like my friend James Burke, platinums games left and right, which is crazy to me. But his experience with Last of Us 2, I thought there was going to be no chance he was going to like it after playing 1, because he loved 1, and he takes, like, certain things happening to certain characters very seriously. And, like, he, no matter the quality of the Star Wars sequels, the fact that Han Solo died, he was never gonna like it. Like, he's just like, fuck this is bullshit, like, I'm out. And it ruins his experience. It's a testament to the quality of Last of Us 2 that James Burke prefers it over the first game, because the story is just that damn good. The game is just that damn good. It takes everything that made Last of Us 1 special and somehow turns it up even more when it was already so good. Last of Us 2 is fucking phenomenally special to me. I can't wait to see what HBO ends up doing with their Last of Us show, because I think that also can be something that is phenomenal when we're dealing with what at the end of the day is a zombie video game, right? Like, I think that what Last of Us can do in 2020 in terms of taking the ideas of what are zombies and still making it cool, still making it fresh, making us care so much about these characters, let alone the fact that, you know, we always talk about the context of when we're playing games. We played Last of Us 2 in the middle of a pandemic. I think that is something that a lot of people don't vibe with. I very much did.
And now, yeah, I think for me, the thing I adore about Last of Us is how well it justifies itself as a sequel, and how much it really took what Last of Us 1 set up and piggybacked off it in a way that felt both true to that game, but also felt very original for what 2 is and what it did with his characters. Because that was my biggest fear going into it, was that I loved Last of Us 1 so much, and I wouldn't have thought Last of Us 1 needed a sequel or could have used a sequel. And the way in which in the sequel they were like, all right, cool, we're gonna do these characters justice. We're gonna take these characters and evolve them, and really take some of the themes of Last of Us 1 in order to inform what the sequel is gonna be. But really, like, made itself his own and introduced new characters that feel just as true to the series as characters from 1. The way in which they went for it, I think truly speaks to how well they're able to write over there at Naughty Dog.
Yeah, I'm going to write a line here, because, like, I think people are going to be like, oh, Imran hates Last of Us 2, and that's, like, why he's, you know, whatever. But if I hated it, I wouldn't put it on the list.
Put it on your list, exactly.
Yeah, I put it on 9, and, like, the thing about Last of Us 2 is I really love about half that game. And then there's a point where it just broke. And, like, that point is, I think, obvious to anyone who's played the game, and I don't think I'm going to spoil it. But, like, I think a lot of what I was attaching to that game was not nostalgia for Last of Us 1, but a desire to fill out the thematic, like, the thematic event of the story and see those to a thorough end. And, like, it's not that the game didn't have closure. It's that I think the game went too far for me in trying to rub the lack of closure in my face. And, like, by the time I got to the Rat King, I was done with that game. Like, I played through the rest of it, but, like, mentally I was just like, I'm not having a lot of fun at this point. And it just kept going for another, like, 4 hours of that after that. So I really liked The Last of Us 2. I really like half. I think half of it is a game of the generation, but the rest of it just didn't do it for me. And I wish it had. At no point do I relish the fact that it didn't. And I'm really looking forward to whatever they do next with the same. I doubt I doubt they stay away from the Last of Us universe forever. Whatever they do next, I hope that it hits better for me. Because I love Last of Us 1. And I love 1.5 Last of Us games, I guess I should say.
Well, now, I can't believe I'm saying it. Kind of funny. His game of the year is Final Fantasy VII Remake. Holy hell, man. I can't say I'm mad. Can't say I'm mad.
You can't be mad. What a great game Final Fantasy VII Remake is.
What a fantastic game. It has some issues, definitely. Of course. Some pacing situations. And I do think that the end game content is severely lacking. I would have wanted to play the game more than the game allowed me to, essentially. Like, give me some type of arena that isn't limited to like 10 matches and that's it.
Yes.
But it is such a success. We've talked about it so many times on the different shows that like I can't believe they took something as beloved and that has so much meaning to me personally and then completely turned it on its head in some ways, but followed down the path in a way that's I think even clearer than the original vision to just be fantastic. And the point that I'll always bring up is I can't believe they added a third girl into my love of Tifa Aeris, and then we stand Jesse, man, and it's just like that is Final Fantasy is about story, it's about characters, and Final Fantasy VII in particular needs those things to be awesome. And when you get to Red 13, it's like they're fucking doing it, and I'm fucking here for it. This is so cool. But I also think it's crazy that none of us voted this number one.
Yeah. So do you want y'all want the breakdown here? The reason this was number one was because it was the most consistently voted game. Three of you had it at your number two with, I think it was Greg who had it at number seven.
Number seven.
Yes. Yeah. And so Greg and Tim had Last of Us Part Two at number one, but then Blessing and Imran had it much lower. And what was it, like Hades was also like really inconsistent, like where it was placed. Because Final Fantasy VII Remake was so consistently voted on as number two, the vote was essentially split, and Final Fantasy VII Remake came out on top.
I figured there was like Blessing. We were talking on the stream like about the idea. Like I think maybe FSM can just kind of sneak in that way. Like, and I'm delighted. Honestly,
it beat out Last of Us Part Two by 2 points. It got 31 in the end.
Oh, jeez!
Wow,
just narrowly sneaking by. Damn. Tim, I remember 2019 New Year's. I was at your desk and we were talking about Final Fantasies. You're like, no, FF7 is like my favorite. I was like, no, for me it's FF6 because that's you said 10. Right?
Yeah, right. But 7's right behind it.
Yeah, for me it was 6. And then like after playing this, after thinking about it over the year, I think it actually straight up might be 7. And like Remake did that interesting thing of I was looking forward to this game. I was sure like it was going to be at least some degree of quality. I did not expect to fall in love with it. I did not expect to be like when the credits rolled. No, because I was the first one to finish it. When you texted me about it, and I was like, holy shit. Like, I cannot believe, like, for a Final Fantasy VII fan, this is a hell of an experience. For a non-fan, this is a hell of an experience. But like, I figured I would like it. I didn't figure that I would love it, that it would be like among one of my favorite games of the generation. And that like that it's not perfect, I think kind of reinforces that for me. Because there are parts that drag, there are parts I don't like, but the parts that hit so hard for me that I will probably in my gaming career not forget how I felt at the end of this game or how I felt during that Genova fight or like
Hell House.
Yeah,
or Hell House
is like one of the highest highs in that game. It's dope as fuck.
When Hell House happened, I literally took a picture off my TV and DM'd Reb, who had never played FF7 up to that point. Or she played a little bit, but she never saw the Hell House. I was like, oh my god, you don't understand why this is so amazing. But let me tell you, this is so amazing. And like, I think that was the one that crystallized for me. Like, this game is made by people who love Final Fantasy VII as much as I do. And they love it so much they're willing to tear it apart. And I think that is something that appeals to me personally, that the idea of we revere this thing so much that we can't make the exact remake that we would want to make, so we're going to make something new. And that speaks directly from my heart.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, you know, I have no affinity for Final Fantasy, the original. Like, I've never beaten a Final Fantasy. I've started a whole bunch of Final Fantasies, including 7, the original. And totally fall out of them. They just don't click for me. They don't do it. So Remake was such an interesting thing of like, I liked in Final Fantasy 15 the battle system of it, right? Like, I like the action-y gameplay of it. And I remember Tim and I talking so much about, like, even when we got hired to do the Final Fantasy 15 reveal event, I remember them distinctly wanting me and Tim, and I was like, that's cool. I'm not a Final Fantasy guy. And their whole point was like, no, this is a game we think can get non-Final Fantasy fans and Final Fantasy fans. And while I liked the combat of it, like, the story just didn't stick, and I bounced so early on that game. And so for 7, you know, Remake coming into it, I was interested by that, but afraid of the same thing. And the way they made me care about everybody, the way they gave me a story that kept me interested in characters that kept me going, and then a gameplay loop that I really enjoyed and a combat system I really fucking dug. Like, I remember texting Tim and being like, dude, I'm fucking in. And I remember how excited he was that suddenly I was in on this. Yeah.
I thought you were fucking with me. Like, like, legitimately. We talked a little bit about it last week, but I want to give a shout out to the Airbuster fight. Cause like, yeah, that is the moment for me that, like, me and Bless got to play in the preview event, that when that happened and the music kicks in with the remix of Still More Fighting that's playing is so undeniably perfect and such a good representation of how good this remake is and what this remake means, like what it means to remake Final Fantasy VII, which is to perfectly capture all the emotions and you know, experience that we had, but enhance it up to a bazillion with choirs and guitars and fucking just sheer insanity for something that, like everyone was saying last week, was just a boss fight. It's not like Genova. It's not like some iconic battle, but it is now iconic. It is now something. It's like that shit mattered so much because it was core. And Final Fantasy VII Remake makes things matter more in Final Fantasy VII, and I will always appreciate it for that.
Yeah, I came at the game from the same perspective as Greg, where I had tried a bunch of different Final Fantasies and I just fell off each and every one of them. And I always had friends that loved Final Fantasy VII, and I always kind of wanted to understand that love, but I just didn't have it. And I had started Final Fantasy VII a bazillion times through emulators and ports and all that stuff. And when Final Fantasy VII Remake came out, or when we got the codes for it to start playing, and even, actually, I guess before that, even when we did the preview build, right? Like that's when it started hitting of, wow, this thing actually seems pretty special, and this thing actually plays very well, and oh man, this is stylish. Actually getting our hands on the game proper and getting into it and experiencing those characters and experiencing these different story moments, where for me, like having not played through the original Final Fantasy VII that much, you know, getting past the points where I had played in the remake, I wouldn't have realized that, like, certain things that they dwell on in the remake and certain scenes that they really stick through and make emotional and create an impact with were things that were barely thought of in the original game. That's the thing that blew me away as I went back to play some of the original and get that context of the story. And so, like, in Remake, the scene where, like, and I guess this is slight spoilers for the very beginning of Final Fantasy VII, but, like, you know, the part where the plate fell, like, I remember how I felt in that moment playing Remake and being like, wow, like, they're really doing this thing that feels real and feels serious, and seeing Barrett's reaction and seeing Barrett try to figure out, like, oh, where's my daughter, and then going through all those motions, there was such power for me in not only how good the writing was, but how good the performances were for characters that are very cartoony in nature. Like, these are anime characters. Like, these are characters that do not have, like, it's not Last of Us. It's not Ghost of Tsushima, where you have that facial capture and you have these characters that are emoting in that way. And Final Fantasy VII Remake, with these exaggerated characters that are living in this world filled with magic and ridiculous shit, I felt the emotion on Barrett's face in a way that I just wasn't expecting. And that hit me. Like, I found that so good.
And that's the thing, again, for, you know, being there, like, I was came out of that so like, oh man, Barrett's awesome. And talking to you guys about it, we're like, no, Barrett actually, you know, was kind of a joke in the first game, and he didn't have that kind of range. And it was like, oh my gosh, like, that's incredible that they were able to redefine this character, let alone make Jesse a character. If I would have done an exit survey leaving the game, I would be like, oh, clearly Jesse was like a main character in the original, right? Like, fuck no, like, Jesus, she was so good in this, right? Like, everything they do, so well done.
I also want to say, like, I really love the battle system in this game. Like, literally, as like, they don't exploit it until hard mode, but hard mode is like such a good emphasis on, like, oh, these are all puzzles. You have to solve every one of these puzzles. Every individual fight is like a different thing that, like, towards the end of getting the platinum, my hand started really hurting. And there was a point where I was like, no, I'm just gonna keep playing. Like, I don't care that my hand's hurting. I enjoy this game too much.
Hey, Rod, Can you imagine if I were to go back in time to June 15th, 2015, after E3, when at the PlayStation E3 conference they announced this, and I were to whisper to you, one day you're not going to be a Game Informer, you're going to be a Kind of Funny. And Final Fantasy VII Remake is going to be our fucking game of the year. It would have been unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Who the fuck are you? Get away.
That would have been the most ridiculous thing possible. Of like even because back then Square, like, they had such a bad reputation. Like, totally. I didn't like 15. I thought it was like merely okay at best. I did not. FF7 honestly makes me confident in Square of being like, oh shit, they can make game of the year quality games. And literally, here is the proof. They made a game of the year right mm-hmm. here in a year where like Naughty Dog put out a game, Nintendo put out a major game. Like, there are so many great games, and Final Fantasy VII is the one we chose as game of the year.
Yeah, I just Beautiful. Can't believe it. And a year after Kingdom Hearts 3, we got this. How? Is that right? Was it 2 years? I don't even remember.
Yeah, 2019.
That was when I started working at Kind of Funny, I remember.
Either way, it's just unbelievable. Director. Yeah, like the level of quality difference there is just unbelievable. But yeah. Everyone, here it is. Final Fantasy VII Remake, Kind of Funny's Game of the Year 2020.
Well deserved.
Well deserved. What a
Can't
shock.
Can't wait to see what Andy has to say in the fucking comments this year.
His Bloodborne.
No, he's just going to do a really long one about like how Control is somehow still this game of the year.
Still right? the game of the year.
Yeah. Clown. If he gets on the Bloodborne train, I might join him because Bloodborne, oh man, that's a good game, right? Right, guys? Very good game.
We are about to do the Patreon exclusive post show where we will be doing this year's first Bless Who.